What's up, everyone? It's Michael Scotto, HoopsHype.com's NBA writer and host of the Hoops Hype podcast. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about the Toronto Raptors. So I wanted to bring in Blake Murphy, my former colleague from The Athletic and a current host on Sportsnet 590, The Fan in Toronto, to preview the offseason for the Raptors. We'll break down the trade rumors surrounding OG Anunoby, the possibility of a Fred VanVleet extension, the futures of Gary Trent, Thaddeus Young, Chris Boucher, and much more on today's episode. Blake, great to catch up with you, my man. How's life your way up in Toronto?
It's pretty good, man. How are you doing?
I'm not bad, man. Once I knew I was going to do a Raptors pod, I definitely wanted to get you on. You've broken some news on that team in the past, and obviously it was a pleasure working with you at The Athletic. And they've been in the news lately, brother, a lot to get into. And it always seems like the Raptors find a way to, whether it's rumors about them trying to get a center. But this time, we start out with OG Anunoby. And his name has been floated out there a little bit with some trade speculation from some outlets about the possibility of him being a trade chip. So I was doing a little bit of digging, and to my understanding, Blake, the Toronto Raptors are not looking to trade OG Anunoby, league sources told HoopsHype. For Toronto to consider training Anunoby, it would have to be a substantial package for the soon-to-be 25-year-old forward, along the lines of either a noteworthy upgrade at center, which they've been looking for a while, or a top 10 draft pick, which is pretty substantial. I mean, you know this, Blake. Toronto's been linked to several centers in the past. Most recently, you know, Rudy Gobert's popped up, but they've been linked to Miles Turner, Yusuf Nurkic, Jakob Poeltl, Nicholas Claxton, etc. And with the emergence of Scottie Barnes, Anunoby's Toronto's best trade asset if the organization wants to acquire a true center and move Pascal Siakam to power forward and Barnes to small forward for more of a traditional lineup. I was curious from your standpoint, being out there in Toronto, what had you heard on OG Anunoby's and the possibility of him being traded, and just what you think of it in general? Because, I mean, he's been a valuable player for them, and his numbers have only gone up since he came into the league with Toronto.
Yeah, it's a bit of a, there are a few layers here, and you know, the primary one is, you're right, or your league sources are right, that it would take a lot for the Raptors to move OG Anunoby. Masai Ujiri loves this kid, and there are a lot of reasons for that. The primary ones are on the court. He's really good. He's an all-world defender. He's very efficient when he's playing that kind of tertiary, lower usage, spot-up, dominant role. And they still think that there's some upside in the self-creation game. He didn't have the best of seasons with regard to that this year. They gave him a lot of opportunity early on while Siakam was out to figure that out and expand his game a little bit. And he did that, and it wasn't the most efficient. And then every time he started to figure it out and it looked like it was going that way, he got hurt and went out of the lineup. And OG Anunoby's availability has been a small problem over his tenure with the Raptors, certainly not enough for them to want to move off of him for that reason. But what I think has happened there is Anunoby showed in small windows that he can carry more usage and he can create for himself a little bit. But if you're looking at a team where there are six or seven mouths to feed and only so many balls to go around, it's hard to make the case to funnel more of the offense his way when he's in and out of the lineup and when he's not quite as efficient as some of the other guys. Now, he was probably their most well-rounded offensive player in the postseason. Siakam was obviously their best player, but OG had a higher usage and had a pretty efficient postseason. So that's what you're kind of hoping for from him. But he was also in the 11th percentile as an isolation scorer this year. So there are some reasons to not give him more, and there are reasons to give him more. I think this is probably mostly, though, a case of other teams would like to have OG Anunoby, and they look at a Raptors team that has six core pieces, and long term, maybe some of those guys get unhappy with their usage rate or something like that. And there have been, you know, I know Jake Fisher did the follow up report of, hey, OG's not the only one unhappy with his role in Toronto. I don't know about that. If you're winning and everyone's improving and everyone's going to get paid, I don't think, like, I think you can figure it out. And as much as maybe they're not happy with usage rate or something like that, like, they all play a lot of minutes. It's not a heavy depth team, so there'll be enough touches to go around. Now, as it pertains to the Raptors' interest in a trade, I don't think it's any secret that OG would be the most logical trade chip in a lot of scenarios, because while I think the team would prefer to trade Gary Trent Jr., he only has 1 year left before he can opt out. So if you're talking in terms of value that another team might see in a guy, it's not quite the same since OG has an extra year on his deal, extra year before his opt out. And OG's about the same price and a better all around player. So if the Raptors were to get involved in something bigger, it makes sense that OG would be a part of those discussions. Big picture, though, this screams to me that other teams would really like OG Anunoby. They've heard little rumblings that he would like more touches, or Clutch would like him to have more touches. And because of that, you put those pieces together and teams want to see if they can shake OG Anunoby free, which, good for them. This is how the game is played. Maybe it works out. I don't think it's going to in this case.
Yeah. And I mean, Blake, the thing that's interesting to me is the guy averaged 36 minutes a game last year and he was scoring 17 points. It's not like he wasn't getting the ball. I think you're spot on with the Gary Trent note, which we're going to get into a little bit later on in the pod for sure. You know, to me, when I look at Anunoby, I think his age, that he's going to be 25 coming up soon. This is a guy that's got a lot of prime basketball left. He's on a reasonable contract, certainly looking ahead. So I agree with you. Logically, he's the most likely trade candidate. And I think if you're going to go for a guy like, you know, Rudy Gobert or something like that, some of those names I've mentioned, then yeah, he's got to be the guy you're probably going to have to part with. But you got to give it to get in this league. I think those are the only scenarios, though, where it's like I touched on earlier, and you know, you kind of referenced as well. If unless they're getting a substantially noteworthy upgraded center or a top 10 draft pick, I don't necessarily see it.
And even then, sorry, I just want to interject that. Like, even then, I don't think, you know, I don't think Gobert is a reasonable target for the Raptors, mostly because they'd have to give up two pieces of their core to make the money work. Dan Tolsman said at a pre-draft workout media session the other day, he's their assistant general manager. He got asked if he thinks, you know, the number seven pick could turn into an OG Anunoby. And he said the way OG's going, probably not. So this is a team that is on record as saying they don't know, like, they think OG is, obviously he has the benefit of being almost 25 years old, but that's the level they see him at, where the number seven pick maybe doesn't even develop into a guy that good. So I don't think, like, I think this is a case where when we're doing hypotheticals, you have to work him in to make it work for the other side. But I don't think the Raptors are throwing in him in hypothetical. I think this is mostly just like us looking at, well, do they need a center and who would make sense? I don't, like, I think the Raptors would rather go into the season without a traditional center than trade OG for a center who is a worse player than OG is overall. They're pretty committed to this Vision 6-9. They're probably watching Warriors and Celtics in a series where, you know, nobody playing minutes is bigger than 6'10". So you can do this. And then if you're high on Precious Achiuwa, as they are, you know, I don't know, do you trade OG Anunoby for a center who's going to block some of Precious Achiuwa's development or minutes or whatever? It's just, it's hard. It's basically where I'm at is I understand why a lot of teams would want OG Anunoby and a lot of trade scenarios would include him. But what I have trouble with is finding the deal where trading OG Anunoby actually makes the Raptors better.
That's a fair point. I mean, I think the whole 6'8", 6'9", kind of across the board front court, it would be interesting there. Precious is a guy that Masai Ujiri, from what I've heard, is a really big fan of. So you make a good point there. And not only with OG, they've got some other stuff they've got to figure out as well. You know, the next item I wanted to touch on with you, Blake, was Fred VanVleet. And the Raptors and all-star point guard Fred VanVleet are expected to discuss a possible contract extension this offseason, league sources told HoopsHype. And VanVleet will become extension eligible this offseason for up to 3 years, almost $89 million. He could also decline his player option for the 2023-24 season and extend for up to 4 years, $114+ million, as our HoopsHype capologist Yossi Goslin outlined in his Raptors offseason preview. Following an all-star season, there's no question VanVleet is worth the full extension amount he's eligible to be paid. That's certainly my stance. I think for Toronto, that's going to be an interesting question for them. I would think so, given the fact that the cap is projected to rise eventually as well. Something that, you know, could make sense for both sides. I mean, Blake, you've seen this guy up close. You've seen him develop. This was a guy that at one point, you know, was playing for the Raptors 905, their G League squad at one point, and has really developed into a very good two-way player for Toronto. What do you see for Fred VanVleet's future when you look into your crystal ball?
Yeah, this is a guy who, you know, it wasn't that long ago that I was at Summer League talking to him, and he was trying to get like a 50K guarantee on a camp invite, basically. So to see him here now where we're talking about max extension is pretty crazy. I think the Raptors value him a ton as a player and even more as a, you know, like a culture building piece. He is kind of, he's kind of taken over from the DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry tree of, you know, face of the franchise or at least voice of the franchise. And in the locker room, him and Siakam have a good kind of 1-2 dynamic in terms of how the team's pecking order goes and how the team's leadership dynamic goes. So all those are great reasons you'd want to keep Fred VanVleet. There are two things that I think might give the situation just a little bit of pause. The first is that there's not really a rush because, yes, VanVleet could opt out after this coming season, but the Raptors would still have his bird rights. There's, you know, they're in a position where they'd be able to keep him if they really needed to. The other thing is, at some point, the Raptors may be forced into a decision of what timeline are we operating on? And you look, and Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam aren't old, but they'll both turn 29 before the playoffs this year. Meanwhile, OG Anunoby is about to turn 25. Gary Trent Jr. is 23. Precious Achiuwa is 23. Scotty Barnes is not even 21 yet. So that's a small thing. I think the Raptors would rather have VanVleet locked up and have to deal with that later if it comes to that. But it's probably a small consideration when you look forward to what a cap sheet could look like in, say, 2025 when a Scotty Barnes or a Precious Achiuwa or guys like that are on their next deals. Is Fred amenable to a deal that's a little below his max, where he's making 21.3 this year? You outline some of the max frameworks he could get there. Would he take 25 a year to guarantee a couple more years, and he leaves a little bit off the top or a little bit off of what he could get by going to free agency, but he gets that security now coming off, you know, the fourth consecutive season where he's missed a good chunk of time. That's something that Fred's camp probably has to consider, given the bet on yourself pedigree. I think I know where he lands. But that's something that they'll have to look at in these conversations. I'd probably lean towards something getting done versus not getting done, though.
I can certainly understand that take on Fred. I mean, the bet on himself mantras worked out well for him, to be honest. He did originally a shorter deal with Toronto when it put him in a position to get paid on his last contract. Worked out well. And now he's in another position to get paid. So either way, good stuff for Fred. You also touched, Blake, on the fact that, in your opinion, you know, Toronto may prefer to trade a guy like Gary Trent as opposed to OG Anunoby. Gary Trent is an interesting player that I wanted to get your thoughts on as well, because to me, Gary Trent is a player to keep an eye on this upcoming season. Because he's effectively in a contract year since he has an $18.79 million player option for the 2023-24 season. If Trent can duplicate or improve upon his numbers from this past season, he's a candidate to opt out of his player option for a new long-term deal. With that in mind, you touched a little bit on the possibility of him as a trade candidate. The Lakers, and obviously they have a heavy influence with Anthony Davis and LeBron James there. Gary Trent, also part of Clutch Sports, had called and were poking around on him last year when they were dangling the whole Kendrick Nunn, Talen Horton-Tucker and a pick package throughout the league. When you look at Gary Trent Jr.'s future with Toronto as well, what do you project for him, given the fact that he does have that player option and he could theoretically hit the open market if he has a similar year like he did or better?
Yeah, not even theoretically. Like I would, it's not in, I haven't completely deleted his player option year from my spreadsheet, but it's certainly in the, well, don't expect this to be here. That's going to be a different number come 2023 territory. He's a guy who, as I just mentioned, he's still only 23. He has shown now he can score at pretty good volume on a winning team. He averaged over 18 points a game this year, hit almost 40% of 8 threes a game. Before you consider any other skill set, like that alone is going to get you $18 million on the open market at that age and with that shooting profile. So you also factor in that he improved defensively a little bit this year. Now, Raptors fans tended to overrate him a bit because of the steals per game and the deflections. It wasn't a big shock that he was the guy Philly was often targeting in the playoffs, but he took a step forward in that regard, and he's only 23. You figure he could take another step with that. If he improves even a little bit as a playmaker when he attacks closeouts, that's another wrinkle he can add. And when you look at skill set scarcity, not only is he a good three-point shooter, but he's capable of creating that shot or long twos for himself. And those long twos are, you know, obviously not your number one preference for a shot profile, but those are hard shots to create for yourself. And he shot them at like a 38% clip. So the ability to get those off late in shot clocks and without an assist is really valuable. So I think, yeah, he's, you know, he's opting out and you're talking $20 million as a starting number for him, as long as he has another solid season. That does, to me, that makes him the guy from this six-man core that the Raptors would most logically be open to dealing. I know he's still very young, but he's the next guy to get a big raise. And this was part of my issue with the contract at the time was, you know, I wasn't as negative on the actual dollar value as some people, but it was, well, if this turns out well, you only got him for 2 years and then you're gonna have to pay him more. And if it doesn't turn out well, then, you know, you've got a $19 million Jordan Clarkson on your books or something like that. So reasonable bet from the Raptors that he'd get better, but not a lot of team side upside on this contract. So I would say that he is, you know, when you're talking about salary matching and you look and Fred's at 21, OG's at 17, Gary's at 17.5, Gary's the guy from that trio that you'd be most comfortable moving off of this core, I think.
And it's interesting because OG Anunoby's got a guaranteed salary for next season and the following season after that. To your point at that, you know, Toronto's also got some other front court guys that they've got to look at in terms of free agency, and Thaddeus Young and Chris Boucher. Let's start with Thaddeus Young. From what I've heard, the Toronto Raptors want to re-sign Thaddeus Young in free agency. League sources told Hoopsite. Toronto gave up a first-round pick in the draft as part of the trade to acquire Young. And the Raptors believe he's a good veteran locker room presence who can still contribute on the court, coming off the bench for them. To me, I think he's a fine fit for them in kind of that power forward, small ball five role. You know, Thaddeus really had a good season prior to going to San Antonio with Chicago. I felt like he really helped his stock that year, and there was a lot made that, you know, whether, you know, him ending up being going to San Antonio, Chicago was trying to keep him at the time, but it didn't end up working out. In Toronto, though, I think he's a good piece for this young core to have as a veteran guy, as I touched on, and a guy that can still give you a little something off the bench. Do you have an idea what Toronto would value him at in terms of a dollar amount by any chance?
Not specifically. I think they probably look at, well, they've got about, what, I think about 30, I don't have the number in front of me, but about $31 million under the projected tax line in wiggle room. And that's for basically Boucher, Thad, and the mid-level. So once you chop off the mid-level, you're looking at maybe $20-21 million between Boucher, Thad, and roster fillers. So I think those are kind of the constraints that they're working within. Chris Boucher, you know, probably looking at maybe $10 million. So maybe you're only comfortable going to five for Thad, or, you know, to beat the market, you go 4.5 to beat the biannual exception and basically bet that he won't get the, you know, the full mid-level somewhere else. And all you have to beat is the biannual, or you match the room exception or something like that. That's probably the tier I see him in. I don't think they'll pay him at the level that he's coming off of. I know they really talked about his bird rights being a valuable thing to them. It's just, it's hard to see how, unless it's on a 1-year deal, I guess, how that is the most logical deployment of assets. If it's beyond, you know, if we get up to say $7 million, $8 million, if we get into that range, then you start looking at, okay, well, he's like the fifth power forward slash center in this group and leadership's great, but, you know, how are you improving the team elsewhere? You have more backcourt needs. So that's kind of, and then if Boucher walks, then you're comfortable paying Thad a little bit more because that's another rotation spot. That's more minutes. That's another, you know, another kind of, it sounds weird to say about Chris Boucher, but on this team, that's a vet. So that's another vet gone. So I don't have a great sense on the dollar amount, but I do think, like, if you're a Raptors fan, roughly $30 million for Boucher, Young, and the mid-level is probably what you should have in your head as like a very rough offseason.
You touched a little bit on Chris Boucher and a projected value that you felt. The Toronto Raptors have interest in re-signing Chris Boucher. You know, league sources told Hoopshype. Boucher had a breakout campaign during that 2020-21 season, where he set career highs across the board. And he played 80 games for the first time in his career this past season, which was good because some people, you know, had some questions about his injury history in the past. I mean, at 29, he's still, you know, he kind of fits with some of these other guys on this team. At 29, he's still in the prime of his career, and he's getting ready to enter unrestricted free agency. You touched a little bit on, I think it was $10 million or so for him. I think that's an interesting price range at that point. Then you're looking at kind of like non-taxpayer mid-level range. So you think that's kind of what his value is at this point?
I think that that's probably what you have to get to roughly as the Raptors to keep him from going elsewhere, right? Like Chris Boucher, you mentioned he's 29. He hasn't had a lot of earning years in his career. He made the minimum for 2 years, like, or rather he was on a two-way and then a two-way that got converted and then the minimum. And then he's made, you know, 13.5 over the last 2 years, but he is 29 and hasn't earned a ton of money by NBA standards yet. So I'd imagine that the total dollar amount, the total guarantee there is a real factor for him. And I think given what he's shown as, you know, first big off the bench, a guy who can bring some offense, some rebounding and some shot blocking in a really weak free agent class, someone would go to the mid-level for him. So then if you're the Raptors, you've got to kind of get in that range as well. Maybe he takes a little discount to stick around, but I don't think you're getting him for, you know, $7 million again if he's got $10 million offers up.
That's certainly fair enough in that assessment. You know, other than that, I mean, you know, there's some smaller stuff for the Raptors, like, you know, Savi Mykhailiou has his player option. You know, time will tell on that.
That's honestly, I find that one a fascinating, like, real life decision, because obviously that's $1.9 million guaranteed, and that's more than what he'd make on the minimum if he opted out and signed somewhere else. but is he going to get a guarantee somewhere else? Is it worth it to risk not getting a guarantee somewhere else to possibly get more playing time since you were completely out of the rotation? Like, I can't remember the last time we had a player option close to the league minimum. So it's like a fascinating situation to me.
I mean, from what I've heard, his decision is going to go down to the wire. I think his deadline is June 22nd. So that would be on a Wednesday. Yeah. I mean, it's coming up. I've heard it'll go down to the wire one way or the other. You know, with that in mind, the only other guy I can think of as far as a roster decision, a local guy from my area, actually, in Brooklyn, Justin Champagne. I'd like to see them extend the qualifying offer for him. I think the kid's got some upside, and Toronto's player development could certainly get it out of him.
I'd be shocked if he's not back. They really liked him this year. He was obviously in the rotation for a little bit, bringing that hustle and offensive rebounding and just kind of toughness. And then he went down to the G League, and by the end of that G League season, he looked like a guy who could maybe give you some offense as well. He improved as a corner shooter. He created for himself a little bit. His defense improved over the course of that 905 season. He didn't spend a boatload of time down there, but you know, the back half of that season, he shot 49% and 41% on threes in a much bigger role than we'd ever seen him in before. And again, like some of the Raptors who were going up and down this year struggled defensively. The transition was easier offensively. That wasn't true for Champagne. The rebounding was still there. The smarts are still there. Given how low the qualifying offer is, like for a two-way, it's just the two-way with a small guarantee. I would be shocked if he's not back on, I'll guess, like a two-year minimum with de-escalating guarantee amounts or something like that. I think he's on the roster for sure next year.
Hey, I'd love to see it.
The real question becomes, do they try to bring in his twin brother too? And,
Julian,
back to back undrafted free agent Champagnes for the development system.
both are great kids. I could tell you that. I used to play ball, locally here in Cobble Hill in Brooklyn at Sacred Heart St. Stephen's. I remember when they were younger, both of them used to be in that program too, a little bit, and in the school, and once in a while they come to some games. So I guess they took some pointers from my game a little bit. They grew a little bit taller than I did. Certainly I'm topping out at, you know, about 6 feet in sneakers, and these guys over here are, you know, some intriguing wings at that, but, I'm certainly looking forward to that. I hope he stays. You know, look, Blake, this team's got a great core to look at for sure. I'm very intrigued about the upside about Scotty Barnes as well. I think he's going to be a real find for them. And I love his two-way versatility. You know, we touched on a lot of stuff, brother. I appreciate you coming on to the pod, sharing some of your insight with me. It's always good to catch up, my man. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, man. Look forward to more League Sources Tell Hoops Hype over these next couple weeks. Glad to see all your success, and you know how I feel about you. You're 1A in the tweet deck column this time of year, buddy. Keep up the great work.
My man, I appreciate the kind words. Thank you for that. Always was a pleasure working with you at The Athletic, and still staying in touch at that. Keep doing the thing, and for the Toronto fans, whether it's the Raptors, the Blue Jays, make sure you're listening to Blake on Sportsnet 590, The Fan up in Toronto. I also want to thank everyone for tuning in. And if you want to hear more episodes of the Hoops High Podcast with guest appearances from NBA players, coaches, executives, and media members like Blake Murphy, you can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You can keep up with my tweets on Twitter at Mike A. Scotto. And make sure you're following Blake too. He's at Blake Murphy ODC. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.